Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning, everyone. One of the features of the 21st century, I think it's safe to say, is that you've got the influence of Google everywhere.
Right.
Certainly online it's the case, but it also permeates virtually everything we do, advertising,
our vocabulary has right, changed.
And China is everywhere. Its economic might is evident on everything from shipping boxes, shipping containers, to the foods that we eat and the technical electronic items that we purchase. The ubiquity of China and Google are on something of a collision course, and we heard that this week. Here's a spokesman for Google, Bill Etchison.
Over the last year, we've seen a real tightening of the screw and lots of sites being blocked and so forth. And then we had this cyber attack in December, which made it no longer possible to act under the same rules, and we really could not abide by censorship anymore.
So Google has moved its operation over to a Hong Kong domain where it can operate a little bit differently. But in a sense, China has won something of a victory here, and Google's survival, while certainly assured, is changed in this environment. Joining us now, Nicholas Kristof, two-time Pulitzer Prize winner and columnist for our partner, The New York Times. He was with us a moment ago talking about the collision course of Google and China. And Kenneth Lieberthal is a senior fellow and director of the John L. Thornton China Center at the Brookings Institution. He also advised President Clinton on China policy. Good morning to both of you, Ken and Nick.
Good morning. Good morning.
So, Kenneth, let me just begin with you. Is this dispute have more to do with the fact that Google's product is, in a sense, free speech, unlike, say, KFC's product, which is chicken body parts, and Starbucks' product, which is coffee, and it's the kind of product that Google has that really forces this confrontation?
I think very much so. Every major business that's invested in China, works in China, runs into various kinds of interference by the Chinese government in how things are priced or access to land or access to this or that. But generally, that doesn't affect the very core of the business. For Google, the business is all about free access to information, and the Chinese government is not going to permit that without a variety of restrictions, and Google decided that it just could not operate under those circumstances and be true to its own principles.
Nicholas Kristof, China has had its way with the rule book of the economy for businesses that operate in China for quite a while. Does the nature of Google's business change the game and really put China more on the defensive here?
Well, I think that it has definitely been on the defensive in this case. I think that in a lot of the disputes that China has with the rest of the world, it is able to some degree to play a nationalist card. For example, when the issue of Tibetan human rights comes up, then, you know, it may well be that the Chinese people are actually more nationalistic and more hardline than the Chinese government. On the other hand, the Chinese people tend to actually want a pretty good search engine. They tend to want unfiltered results. And so this is an issue, I think, where there's a real gulf between the Chinese government position and that of the Chinese people.
You recall covering the Tiananmen Square incidents in 1989, where the freedom of speech was expressed by posting characters on these large character posters throughout the Tiananmen Square and other places, which sort of claimed criticism of the Chinese government. Suddenly, in the Google era, the ability to post criticism of the Chinese government is way beyond simply putting up posters. How does that affect all of this?
Well, I think that it's certainly much easier to communicate, and it's not just the internet. I mean, it's been cell phone. When faxes arrived in China, I remember we were we were waxing eloquent about the impact of the fax on China's political scene. But all of these things make it easier to connect with other people. They make it much easier for word to get out when there has been repression in the middle of nowhere in Qinghai province, and word immediately gets out. It tends to raise the cost of that repression. And we've tended to see elsewhere in Asia, in countries like South Korea, in Thailand and Indonesia, that when you get more of a middle class, when you get more communications, then that makes it much easier for people to, in turn, challenge the regime. And I think that's one of the things that China is nervous about.
Kenneth Lieberthal from the Brookings Institution. You know, there's a real irony here, it seems to me, in looking at this, that, you know, there are a lot of people on the sort of progressive left who have looked for an opportunity to challenge corporate, multinational corporations' freedom in operating across borders. And maybe they would have thought that that comeuppance would happen, you know, somewhere in places like Seattle or demonstrations against globalization. But in fact, this is the place where the national interest meets a corporate interest. And I'm wondering if people have difficulty figuring out who's the good guy here.
That may be, although my guess is most of the people on the American left will be supporting Google in this particular struggle, because Google's standing for freedom of information, the ability of people to stand up to their own government and other themes.
As long as Google owns the information, though.
Google doesn't. Look, it's core to Google's business model, but still Google has been a genius. In most instances, has made some missteps over time, but on the whole, it has really positioned itself very effectively as the company that will do no evil, that empowers people around the world with extraordinary access to information, even Google Maps and all that kind of thing. So that I think that the support of the liberal left in this case will be very much on Google's side.
What about the liberal left in China, Nicholas Kristof? Where do they come down on this?
Well, in general, I think we tend to exaggerate the degree to which people in China are fundamentally political. And, you know, people, I think they would like a more democratic system. They don't like it when dissidents are arrested. But those things tend not to be very high on the radar screen. On the other hand, the things that really irritate people tend to be corruption, economic mismanagement, special favors that officials get, and indeed this kind of just sort of petty tyranny on the web. People want decent information, and it's very frustrating and irritating when people have to use their various workaround measures to get it, like proxy software, like VPN.
Sure. Well, let's leave everyone with the question we're asking our listeners today. Which could you more easily do without, Nicholas Kristof, Google or products from China?
Oh, I guess I would have to say that, you know, that products from China are so ubiquitous that I would find it pretty tough to get by without them.
Well, we stumped Nicholas Kristof there, two-time Pulitzer Prize winner, columnist for The New York Times, also Kenneth Lieberthal, senior fellow and director of the Thornton China Center at the Brookings Institution. Thanks to you both.